Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Now, it's time to go deep for the exclusive info you need on the hockey team you love. This is Preds Insiders with your host, Ryan Porth.
Brought to you by Dr. Kelly Rice.
On your flagship home of the Predators Radio Network, Smashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Welcome into this special podcast version of Preds Insiders here on thegamenashville.com and wherever you get your podcast. Ryan Porth here. There's no Preds Insiders on the air tomorrow night because the Preds have a game. They host the Carolina Hurricanes, pregame at 6, faceoff at 7, all the action heard on ESPN 102.5 The Game, and thought, you know, they've won the first two games. Why not talk about them here on this Sunday as we get ready for another two-game set between the Nashville Predators and Carolina Hurricanes after the Preds win 3-1 in game one against Columbus, and then last night a big third-period surge with four goals. That leads them to a 5-2 win over Columbus. They sweep the two-game set against the Blue Jackets. And wanted to welcome in Justin Bradford of Penalty Box Radio to react to the first two games, get you set for the next couple of games against the Hurricanes, and talk about this team overall. Justin, good to see your face this morning.
Yeah, good to see you too. Thanks for having me, Ryan.
No problem at all. So let's start with the player that there have been a lot of eyes on ever since John Hines took over, and that's UC Saros. UC Saros has been huge in the first couple games against the Blue Jackets. I don't think it was any surprise that he got both games between the pipes and that Pecorine did not start either game. But UC Saros, a .959 save percentage in the first two games against the Jackets, one of the biggest reasons why the Preds have started this season 2-0.
Absolutely. And you look at the second game against Columbus, making 42 saves. That's coming up big. And here's the big thing for me, too, though, is he's having defensive support. It's not before where we haven't seen the Predators, where they haven't supported their goaltender that much either. You have Ryan Ellis making a diving save, Mattias Ekholm being in the right place at the right time. He's getting support. That's what you need for a goaltender to be successful, as well as the team in front to be playing much better than they have in the past. The Blue Liners have played much better right now in these first two games in front of UC Saros. Yes, he's stopping a lot of high danger shots as well, but there's times too when maybe he's a little out of position, or maybe there's a weird rebound that happened. His defenders are there to support him too. So he's playing well. The Blue Liners are playing well. You package those things together, it's going to be successful. So he seems to be tracking the puck pretty well. He's staying busy too. We've known in the past that UC Saros has had a slow start. He needs some consistent starts to really warm up. Well, he's had a pretty good start so far against Columbus, which is a dangerous team. Their team is going to be vying with the Predators, I think, for that 3-4-5 spot in the division. So it was a really good litmus test for these Predators, for UC Saros, for the forwards, for the defense, to start off against Columbus and not like a Chicago or Detroit to give false confidence here. But the Predators started off really strong against a team that I think matches up really well with them, and UC Saros stepped up for it.
Well, you mentioned UC Saros and how he's had slow starts in his career with the Predators. They could not afford to have him start slow in a 56-game season where there's such an emphasis on goaltending for every team in the league. You could not afford to have had Saros start slow and then have questions of, all right, is he going to be the guy this year, or are they going to go back to Pecorine? And for him to start this way, and I would assume, obviously, he's either going to get Monday or Tuesday against Carolina. It'll be interesting to see how John Hines approaches that with Saros and Rene. But the fact that he started fast, the fact that this team in front of him is looking pretty good and getting better as these games go along, and not letting something derail them within the game. You know, there is the fluky goal to start the game Thursday night where Favreau comes up into the neutral zone, tries to chip the puck down ice, and it hits Boone Jenner. Boone Jenner has a breakaway. He scores. Last night, they're up 2-1 in the third period. The Blue Jackets scored this fluky goal where it pinballs off a stick, off the post, off Saros' back and in. They didn't let any of those bad instances get to them. And I think the teams in the last couple of years, when something didn't go their way, it snowballed on them. But they've responded in each of the first two games when something bad has happened.
So I think this comes down to a lot of what John Hines has really been pushing on his team, and that's structure. It was during training camp, and we're in the press box, and you can hear almost everything that's being said on the ice, especially when it's being yelled at, and not yelled for the sake of being angry, but yelled so everyone can hear and pay attention. And head coach John Hines is yelling, this is about structure. We have to establish a structure now so we can be successful in the season. It's about the details. We have to establish details, play a detailed game, and have structure. So I asked him about it a little after that, and he said, especially with this type of season, if they instill a structure in this team, when a guy has to roll out because of injuries or because of quarantine, then the next man up can step right in no matter what the role is and play that role really well. They're establishing a new structure for this team, a new Predators identity. That's what I think we've seen in these first two games so far, is the structure they're establishing, the buy-in from the team, because as you said, the team's getting better as the game goes along. Third periods are strong, and we've seen third period meltdowns in the past couple seasons for this Predators team, but for them to get stronger and to keep on pushing in a third period, that shows the structure, especially with line jumbling. I mean, he flipped Hala and Cousins yesterday as well, and it was not necessarily a noticeable change for the worse. It was just a change that it happened, but the team still pushed forward, and they had that structure to rely on that made them successful in the third period. 11 shots in every single period yesterday for the Predators, and they just continue to wear Columbus down. That's what I saw, is they were wearing Columbus down. The second period, yeah, it was a little sloppy, but they reset. They didn't lose the period. They came back out in the third and continued their game and established their game. So that structure is what I've noticed in the first two games. And yeah, it's still early, but that's what you want to see, is this team be able to respond by being down one in both games. They did not score first, but they were able to respond, establish their game plan, and continue to work on it and not freak out like we've seen in the past. They established that structure and had strong third periods, and that's exactly what you want to see out of a team.
So you mentioned the third periods. Philip Forsberg has scored almost identical goals in in each of the first two games in the third period. Two goals, two games for number nine. Feels like he's kind of a man on a mission right now.
He's on pace for 56. but
good,
yes.
Good Franklin High School math there, Justin.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Philip Forsberg, it does look like a man on a mission, and we've heard it, gosh, all offseason, all between return to play and the beginning of the pandemic in the spring and early summer, how he understood that he was inconsistent, that he needs to play better, that he is relied upon to produce offense for this team. And for him to come out and score in back-to-back games to start the season, that's a good start. And so even if he's only on pace to, say, 30-plus goals in a normal 82-game season in this 56-game season on that pace, that's good. He needs to be getting 30-plus period in a normal season. So if he is on that pace, that's successful for him. And he needs to be able to continue to drive that offense. The big surprise has been Luke Cunningham, as well as also on that 56-goal pace. But it's good for the new guy to do that. It's good for Forsberg to do that. It's establishing confidence in the fan base as well. As we know, this fan base, it continues to have expectations for this club, and it gets a little complainy when things aren't going right now, which shows that this team has had success, meaning that's where expectations come from. The expectations that Forsberg is going to provide, and the Forsberg has been given plenty of goals already, and the Joe line is looking very strong, as it looks like sometimes they're just toying with the opposition in the offensive zone, the type of cycle they're able to establish, especially when you have Roman Yossi and Ryan Ellis out there. They're just establishing so many different cycles and getting pucks on the net. And if they don't establish a goal through it, that's fine, because they're wearing the defense down. That's what it seemed to do last night.
So they got contributions more than just the Joe line here in these first couple games, where you mentioned Luke Cunningham. He's also scored a couple goals. But last night, something that really stood out about the third and fourth goals, Brad Richardson scoring the go-ahead goal to make it 3-2, and then Luke Cunningham is getting to the net. And that is something that they have been a perimeter team for way too long in these last couple of seasons, where they would not penetrate the defense and get to the front of the net. And Richardson, Johnny on the spot, right in front of the net to make it 3-2, and then Luke Cunningham driving to the net to make it 4-2. That was something very refreshing to see last night. This Predators team scoring big goals, driving to the net.
And what it showed too is a little bit of an adjustment that they made from the first two periods. Because if I looked at the heat map just to get an idea of where shots are coming from through the first two periods, the left point was so dark red because shots from Ellis, because Ellis led the team in shots, was coming from that spot, or Vietsky shooting from there. anytime the power play, they're shooting from there. They had a lot of perimeter shots, and then they're able to finally drive towards the net. And that Richardson goal was perfect because it was a rebound as well. Shows that there were guys in the right place picking up the trash that are generated off of rebounds. That's how you're going to score a lot of good goals, is you have to get in those quote-unquote dirty areas, pardon the cliche, but you have to get dirty. You have to get there where you're going to get destroyed a few times, but it's going to pay off if you're getting down there towards the net, because weird rebounds are going to happen. That was a weird rebound, and how that just bounced right to the right spot, and Richardson was able to pop it right in. But that's how you have to do, is the little bit of sacrifice of your body to get towards the net, like Victor Arvidsson has done plenty of times, and being right there and sacrificing himself to be right in front of the net to get destroyed by a cross check by a defender. But that's how you produce a lot of goals. It's not always going to be a snipe from Philip Forsberg or a slap shot off of a really fast break by Rocco Grimaldi. You got to get dirty goals. Those are what's going to be the make or break for this kind of team, is if they're willing to go to the net. And they have guys now, because they're trying to be more tough to play against. They have guys that are willing to go to the net to crash and bang a little bit more, but also have that offensive upside. Brad Richardson, I mean, he's a veteran. We know his role is going to be more similar to a Paul Gostad type of thing, which is take some good faceoffs, penalty kill, chip in every once in a while, but he's not going to be expected to put up 15, 20 goals a season. So it's great when the depth can step in, because that's what you want to see when, say, the Joffe line's getting shut down. Can that third line step in and create a goal? Can that fourth line contribute a little bit too? So Colton Sisson's getting a goal, Brad Richardson getting a goal, having your depth players score is going to be very important for this team down the stretch.
By the way, that Sisson's goal, whoo!
Yeah.
That's a beauty.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Hey, when they went back-to-back, I was barely finishing my tweet when these goals were happening. And again, I mean, Paul McCann, PA announcer Paul McCann, had to play catch-up because he couldn't even get a goal announced before he had to get the next one in.
Yeah, no doubt. So they were less than a minute apart, Cunning making it 4-2, and then Sisson's making it 5-2. What would you say overall is the importance of these first two games, not only getting wins, but they did it in regulation against a team in Columbus that you would expect them to be jostling for playoff position all season long in that Central Division?
It shows that they're capable. And that's the thing that you want to know and understand as a coach and as a player, that, of course, every player is going to want to win every game. That's the way it should be. This shows that they're capable of not just winning, but they're capable of establishing a game plan and executing it very well against a very good team. I mean, the Columbus Blue Jackets blue line is good. I don't think it's talked about enough how good that blue line is, especially the top pairing with Zach Werenski and Seth Jones. They're really good. The Predators kind of toyed with them a few times as well. It shows that this team is very capable of winning. I don't want to put them on a pedestal or anything like that, but it shows that they're capable of being very competitive in this division. They had a great test against Columbus. Carolina is going to be another really good test for them as well. Carolina shows they're absolutely beatable by the bottom feeders in the division as well. It's going to be a weird season, but if they go into these things and they are confident that they can win and they establish their game plan and their structure, like I said earlier, they're extremely capable with their depth and their experience, because I think they have the way the team is established right now. Luke Cunning adds a good amount of youth depth in there, which is perfect for the top lines, and that's what you need. That it shows that they can rely on some of these guys to score as well. Philip Forsberg, if he continues to be streaky, that's okay, as long as he can pop in some goals when he needs to be. But it shows that they're absolutely capable of winning games where they fall behind. And having that comeback ability is going to be very important when weird games happen. Don't let a fluke bounce or a weird goal get rid of your confidence in there. Just know that you can still bounce back. And we hadn't seen that in years past. So keep that going. Even if you're down by one or two goals, that they're capable of winning these games, and they could be down by a goal, but still go out and win 5-2. That shows a lot right there in terms of the structure this team's building.
I do wonder if how the schedule plays out with two game sets against your division opponents all season long is going to be a good thing for this Preds team, because we've seen in the last couple of years where they will get up for the division games. And then, for instance, a perfect example, back in February last year, they sweep the back-to-back with the St. Louis Blues. They go to St. Louis, they come back home, they win both games against the Blues, and that was a Preds team that was struggling at the time to find any sort of consistency, and you're like, okay, this is the breakthrough moment for this team. And then they lay a complete egg against the Carolina Hurricanes at home, a team that they only see twice a year, or at that point, twice a year, now seeing them eight times this year. But it seemed like they would get up for the big games, but the other games that filled out the schedule, you could not tell what you were going to get from them night to night. And the fact that, you know, Nick Cousins with Brooks Bratton on the pregame show last night was talking about how this already feels like the playoffs because it feels like game two of the series going into this game against Columbus. And they played really stinking well last night, once again, against the Jackets. And you knew that they were going to get a better effort out of the Jackets than they got Thursday night. They did, and they still won going away with a big third period. And I do wonder if, you know, two games against Carolina, now a division foe, it's a huge litmus test, probably even more so than Columbus. I do wonder if the Preds are going to come out and play really well against a Hurricanes team that has had the Preds number in the last few years.
It's a curious point you bring up, and I'm glad we're on the same wavelength here because I asked head coach John Hines about the preparation for this because during a normal season, you only have, what, three or four back-to-backs that are against the same team. Sometimes you'll have back-to-backs, but it's one team and then another team is waiting for you at home to come and play them. I asked about preparation for this, and he said it's actually a little bit easier because you know you have two games to prepare for against this team, and then you make little adjustments after the first game, and that it's not that you have to prepare for two games at the same time if you have a back-to-back against two separate teams. So it makes the planning structure a little bit easier for him, is what he said, which kind of makes me get in the mind with college football, and if you give a certain team so much time to prepare, they're just going to win, they're going to beat you. John Hines, as the professor that he is, which I like the way he explains so many things, he seems like a professor out there the way he teaches, I'm liking his game plan preparation so far because the team has come out and it looks like they're establishing their game plan. So now for me to have not have to eat these words, let's see what they do against Carolina. But I like what he's saying that in two game sets, it makes them easier for a coaching staff to really come out with film and to come out there and really prepare for it because they know what their plan is for the next two games, period. They already know. They don't have to be looking ahead or worry about looking ahead to the next thing because they know they have two games to prep for and not one game here and then all of a sudden switch gears for the next team. And also it's going to help later in the season, you think, too, because you're going to have so many more games to review and to see how things have changed as well, especially only playing in the division. But this is every team that's going to have this advantage, obviously. But head coach John Hines so far, what I've liked about what he's doing is little adjustments here and there. I really like popping in Matthew Olivier. Even though obviously he didn't end up on the score sheet last night, I think he made some plays out there that helped establish that game plan to be more difficult to play against and made Columbus aware that he was there. So him rotating with Trennan, I think it'd be perfect. They're both wrecking balls out there too. But those little things like that and him being confident enough to put up in different players in that fourth line is going to be big for getting guys in to get some ice time. So I've liked head coach John Hines' game plan so far. If they get through Carolina and, say, split the series or one loss in overtime, still a very successful first four games of the season, losses are going to happen. It's going to be how you lose and what manner did this team lose. Was it close? Was it just complete lack of effort out there? Was it a complete lack of confidence? So going into this thing, too, I'm really curious to see John Hines' preparation plan because he said it's a little bit easier to prepare for things like this. Now how does the team come out and every time when they have these back-to-backs in two-game series?
So Cole Smith was called up off the taxi squad for game one. Matthew Olivier, like you mentioned, for last night in game two. Do you expect to see Jakob Trennan or maybe even Eli Tolvanen in either of these games against Carolina?
I don't expect to see Tolvanen unless some sort of injury or quarantine happens right now because the top three lines are clicking so well. And then I would expect to see Trennan maybe in one game, but Olivier had a pretty good game. I mean, he played just under 12 minutes. That also shows the coaching staff's confidence to be able to roll out the fourth line, even in the third period. And you could tell once the Predators got that lead, the fourth line got a lot more minutes out there to basically just crash and bang and wear Columbus down. Because I believe when I was looking at the time on ice, Olivier maybe had four shifts in the first period, had five shifts in the second, and then had nine shifts in the third period. And it all really started happening after they took the lead. And so they were just rolling those guys out there with a lot of energy to crash and bang. So I would think Olivier's going to get into the next game, and then maybe you see Trennan spot in for the second one. If he doesn't, he doesn't. But he's going to get in there sometime. I really want to see what Jakob Trennan has because he does have an offensive upside. But Olivier impressed me in terms of he did his role. He didn't do anything that was detrimental to the team. He contributed in a manner that was helpful to the club as well. And that's what you want to see out of your fourth line. They're doing things. And then add that little plus with Brad Richardson getting the goal. That's not always expected, but it's nice when they can do that. They just know their role. They play their role. And then they contribute when they can.
So just quickly looking ahead to these two games against the Hurricanes, when the new look Central Division came out, I think this was the team I was most excited to have join this Predators division, because they are so fun to watch. That with Andrei Svechnikov, with Sebastian Aho, with Tara Vinen, with Trocheck, with all the different individuals that they have, the amount of talent that they have on this team, they're really fun to watch, but they also can be Jekyll and Hyde. They've been streaky in the last couple of seasons, even though they've made the playoffs each of the last 2 years. And I think they've proven it in the first couple games where they had to grind out a win in Detroit to open the season, and then Detroit gets them in game two. Maybe Detroit is maybe a little bit better than expectations would suggest, but at the same time, I was a little surprised to see Carolina not have their way in at least one of those games against the Red Wings. So I'm very curious to see how this plays out in the next two games. I would expect the Preds to at least earn a split. I think a split in these two games would be fine. If you get 3 points, great. But if you sweep Carolina and you start this season by sweeping Columbus and Carolina, two teams that you feel like you're fighting with inside the division, I think this fan base is going to start to get really excited about the potential of this team.
They absolutely will. And Carolina, like you said, is very streaky. I mean, in Detroit's win against Carolina on Saturday, Jonathan Bernier really just stepped up big time for Detroit. And I think that's one of the big things right there that happened. And then you had Bobby Ryan contributing right off the bat, Dylan Larkin. So Detroit's role players, if anything, they stepped up for them. And that's what helped them so much in that win. Dylan Larkin had the two goals and Bobby Ryan. So the guys that they expect to be able to perform in Detroit perform. And then their goaltending is what really helped them out too. Because, I mean, Carolina had 31 shots on goal. Detroit only had 21. Yet Detroit gets the win, the 4-2 win. And that's going to be the thing with Detroit, is that sometimes they're just going to get bailed out, I think, with maybe a strong goaltending game here and there. But they don't have enough star power to have consistent types of wins. So they got up for this game against Carolina, obviously. And Carolina might have been overlooking their opponent a little bit too. They have so much talent in Carolina that they should be able to compete with almost any team out there, especially in the forward side. Carolina just could compete with anybody. So it's one of those things that I think in terms of game plan, establishing game plan, Detroit came out a little bit more prepared and ready to go. And they had a hot goaltender. They had their stars that are their stars. I mean, their captain, Dylan Larkin, came out with two big goals. That's what they need from him. But he's not going to be able to do that every game. Dylan Larkin is not going to be able to come out and score two goals every single game. And that's what you're kind of banking on with these other teams, is that Nashville needs to go against Chicago and Detroit. If they could be 13-1-2, I know that's asking a lot, but Chicago's really bad. They're really, really bad.
Hot take, Chicago finishes eighth in this division.
I don't think that's hot at all.
Chicago is awful.
Because their injuries and their goaltending right now, it's going to be really difficult for them to get out of that bottom, because with Jonathan Toews out, with Kirby Dach out, had they had those two guys, I don't think they would be eighth. But right now, Chicago's awful. So, and Detroit looks like they could be a pest a little bit, because they have some guys, maybe some chips on their shoulder, and they'll be a pest every once in a while. But the Predators should go and demolish those teams. Should. Being the key word. And that's where you rack up your points to get into that fourth spot. Get splits against the top four or five teams of the division, and then you dominate the bottom. That's how you make the playoffs. That's what they should be doing. And 13-1-2 would be by far ridiculous. But they need to get in those 16 games, the Predators need to get at least 11 or 12 wins, I really think, for them to feel like they did their job against those two bottom teams.
Final thing for you, Justin. How weird has it been covering these first two games inside Bridgestone Arena with very limited fans in the lower bowl?
It's really weird. And the big thing that stands out to me is you're sitting there, and we all know this feeling that you're typing on a note, you're typing on a tweet, you're watching the game, but you're used to the crowd almost telling you, hey, stupid, look up when something's about to happen, because the roar grows a little bit. Well, there's so many times now that I've almost been caught off guard because I'm watching the game, but you don't hear the crowd roar, and all of a sudden the puck goes in, and then the horn sounds like, oh, yeah, that's a goal. Because you don't have the roar of the crowd going. You just have the horn that really signifies it, and there's too much going on to hear the players cheering on the ice, or even an opposition goal, you don't hear the, oh, come from the crowd either. So you're used to having those kind of signals from a 17,000 person crowd giving you little signals of what's going on too when you're covering the game, because we're having to multitask, because everyone knows you have to multitask in media, whether it's watching, tweeting, taking notes, making sure you're keeping track of everything. And so, yeah, the crowd signals you when certain things are going on, when a fight's going on, when a huge check happens. And I've noticed my brain missing a couple things like that too. So it's actually forced me to pay even better attention to what's going on, because you don't have those little signals to tell you when to look up. But it's been weird. It's been really weird doing pregame with Darren and Chase last night. Was weird because usually you're having to talk over a huge crowd of people in the Barrel House, and there you're just having a delicate conversation with two of your friends. And so it's been weird. I'm glad they're able to play, which has been really good. I know a lot of people just kind of need this as a nice little escape. So it's been good to be able to experience that and be there. And it was almost a little emotional to walk through Bridgestone Arena and see some familiar faces of ushers that you just haven't seen in 10 months. And it's just a little weird to think, wow, hadn't been here to cover a game since March. That's really weird to think about when usually you only have a 4-month break at most. So it's been weird, but it's been interesting fun. The Predators PR staff has been taking good care of us and feeding us, which all media members can appreciate. It's been really good. But yeah, I'm just glad I'm able to be there. It's definitely a privilege to be able to cover hockey right now.
No doubt about it. Justin Bradford, Penalty Box Radio. You can catch him Wednesdays, 8 to 9 p.m. on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Justin, thank you as always. And we'll see how the next couple games pan out between the Preds and the Canes.
Thanks, man. Let's get weird.
All right. Always good to hear from Justin Bradford of Penalty Box Radio. Always appreciate him coming on Preds Insiders, whether it's on the air Mondays at 6 p.m. or here on this special podcast version of Preds Insiders as we recap the first couple games of the season, get you ready for the Carolina Hurricanes. Josh Graham, a radio host in North Carolina, will be joining me here momentarily to offer a Carolina perspective. But a lot of interesting things there from Justin Bradford. The biggest thing that I feel like in these first couple games is that we're starting to see the identity that they've been talking about. They have been loud and clear since the end of that qualifying series against the Arizona Coyotes back in August that this team needs to be harder to play against, tougher to play against. It's almost been cliche for them to say that. And we've seen that in the first couple of games. They just beat the Columbus Blue Jackets a combined 8-3 in the first couple games of the season. Yes, they probably got Columbus at a good time on the schedule because Pierre-Luc Dubois, there's a lot going on there. This team, this Blue Jackets team, seems to be in a little bit of disarray offensively as they work in a couple of new faces. You know, they traded Josh Anderson. They acquired Max Domi. They got them at the right time, but they took advantage. This team last year, or maybe even the year before, I don't think would have taken advantage. I think a split would have been the best case scenario for the team last year or the year prior. So I think it's a good sign that they came out, got the first two wins against the Blue Jackets, and now it's going to be a good test against the Carolina Hurricanes. And before we bring in Josh Graham, if you want to be there Monday night or Tuesday night, you have to be listening to 102.5 The Game for your chance to win a pair of tickets to either Monday night or Tuesday night. Tomorrow on Robbie and Rex Road and Darren Donick and Chase, you'll be listening in the 7 o'clock and 10 a.m. hours for your chance to win a pair of tickets to Monday night's game. And then during the 5 o'clock hour during Stillman and Company and then the post-game show tomorrow night, you can have a chance to win a pair of tickets to Tuesday night's game against the Carolina Hurricanes. So we have your opportunity to get in the building in Bridgestone Arena to see this Preds team after winning their first two games of the season. Should be a lot of fun facing off against the Carolina Hurricanes. Now we get a Carolina Hurricanes perspective from Josh Graham, radio host for WSJS Sports Hub in North Carolina. Josh, thank you so much for joining us here on this Sunday morning in both North Carolina and Tennessee. How are things going?
Oh, man, no shortage of things to talk about, Ryan. Good to be with you.
No doubt about it. And with the Carolina Hurricanes, the Hurricanes go to Detroit, and I think a lot of people thought in this new-look Central Division that the Detroit Red Wings would be the worst team by far of the eight teams. And Carolina comes out with a split, needed some late goals in the first game to pull away and win 3-0. And then last night, Detroit strikes late in the third period. They end up winning 4-2. What did you make of the first two games for the Hurricanes?
Well, it's just one of those deals that the Canes haven't played in such a long time. It's something that Coach Brind'Amour talked about quite a bit after the Thursday night win. You know, it's either just a coach being a coach or if there's just a lot of truth in it. when you win 3-0 and the first comment out of the coach's mouth is, it's going to be a long night for me. There's a lot that I didn't like. And there was even more he didn't like last night when you consider this is a team that's supposed to be leaning on its blue line, and you just have grade A chances left and right from Detroit, who you pointed out, not supposed to be the class of the division this year by any circumstance. And you look at some of the saves Mrazek made. He was standing on his head a little bit, and the defense, the blue line let him down, where you had a couple of deflections into the net. You had one where Hayden Fleury didn't have his stick down, leading to what turned out to be the game-winning goal. So Thursday night, the story, it was the blue line, and that's where we expected this team to really build its identity around. But no doubt, last night was a setback for them.
So what particularly did you like about the Hurricanes' first two games against the Red Wings?
It does seem like that one of the premier young players in the league, Andrei Svechnikov, has taken another step where he's just instant offense. He's instant energy, not playing on the top line, which is something that's been talked about quite a bit leading up to the season. It seems like Brind'Amour wants to give a jolt to the second line by having Svech there rather than pairing him up with Sebastian Aho. And it's working so far. It's engaged Vinny Trocheck, who had a goal last night. And I imagine it's going to get to a point where they're both sharing the same line at some point, maybe even sooner rather than later. But that was some good. Andrei Svechnikov seems to have taken another step, which is a dangerous sight for anybody keeping an eye on the Canes this year.
There's no doubt about that. Svechnikov, 20 goals in his rookie season. Last year, before the pause, had 24 goals. He seems to be getting better and better at a young age, and there was a lot of hype surrounding him coming out of the NHL draft. Young kid out of Russia, 2 goals in 2 games. What do you feel like his ceiling is?
Oh, he is on his way to being a perennial all-star, a highlight reel every night. And when the Hurricanes drafted him 2nd overall, there was just this sense of excitement from the staff immediately, knowing they just grabbed the future face of this franchise, a franchise that won the Stanley Cup in 06, that's been to a couple, Rob Brind'Amour playing a role in that. And they've had some really good players from Ron Francis to Eric Staal. In fact, they've had a Staal on their roster now for the last 20 years, dating back to 2003 or close to it, since Jordan's on the team. But that Andrei Svechnikov's the next name in line. It's him and Aho, 2 blossoming stars in this league. You see the lacrosse-style goal that we haven't seen in this league, something you see with the Michigan highlight way back when, and he's doing it not just once but twice in a year span. He is special, doesn't say enough. Special is too loose of a term to describe what the ceiling of Andrei Svechnikov is.
Well, I think you speak of the lacrosse goal. I think Philip Forsberg was a little disappointed that Svechnikov didn't get a punch on that, because Forsberg has been trying that for years, and it just didn't pan out. And then, you know, coincidentally, right after Svechnikov scored just like that with the lacrosse goal, Forsberg ended up scoring a lacrosse goal himself. So I wonder if we'll see one of those in the next couple nights here as the Canes and Preds face off.
We're calling it. We're calling our shot. Clip this right here if it happens, Ryan Porth. If there is a lacrosse goal this week, it is this Predators Inside podcast that called it first. You heard it here first.
No doubt about it. So the Canes coming off back-to-back playoff appearances for the first time in almost 2 decades. What would you say the expectations for this team are heading into this year?
I think if you ask Coach Brind'Amour, and this is something we asked the owner of the team, Tom Dundon, this past week, hey, what's the expectation? They would tell you it's title or bust. But if we're talking reasonably here, I think there really is this logjam, it feels like, in terms of teams that feel like they have a shot at holding up the cup at the end of the year, that are slightly behind the level that we're seeing Tampa Bay play at to start this year. And Carolina, I think, just needs to prove that they've closed that gap. Because in Brenda Moore's first year, as you mentioned, they make their first playoff appearance. They've done it. They had this long gap. They get into the playoffs. It's awesome. And then winning game 7 in Washington, beat the defending champs. At that point, it's just gravy. But they get to the conference finals after sweeping the New York Islanders. At that point, you're just wondering, what exactly can this team be? And they got swept by the Boston Bruins in the Eastern Conference final. At that point, Kate Sands still thought, hey, this team, it exceeded expectations. Then you go into the bubble last year, and they run into the Boston Bruins again, and Carolina's unable to take a game. There's just a gap there that's noticeable between Carolina and wanting to be there versus being one of these franchises that expects to win, that almost feels a responsibility to win. That's why you talk about these coaches talk about, hey, it's a relief when they win these big games rather than absolute euphoria when it happens. The Hurricanes aren't that type of franchise yet. But this season, I think they need to understand, or their goal is, we need to close that gap between Carolina and some of the top teams in the league.
So how do they do that? Is it goaltending stepping up? Is it something where they're not going to be able to do it until they get better, more consistent goaltending? Is it something where they just need more experience going up against teams like Tampa Bay or Boston, like you spoke of with the last two playoff exits coming at the hands of the Bruins? What gets them to that next level?
I think it's just the younger core of this team developing and learning how to play at that level. 2 years ago, when they ran into Boston, Aho, Teravainen, and Svechnikov were so young, and they were a good story and played well in the postseason going into that series, then did nothing against those terrific Bruins players, that line with Marchand and Pastrnak. They could do nothing with it. And last year, it looked like Carolina was going to be in position again to, make some progress. You had some of these players playing better in that series, but Boston, once again, expected to be there, knew what it took to win. I think the goaltending, they didn't adjust it at all. It's still Mrazek. It's still Reimer. I'd expect tomorrow Reimer to be in net since Mrazek's been in the first two games, but we'll see. Brindamore, he keeps that very close to the vest. But this year, I think it's about the younger players just taking steps. We talk about Svechnikov. He seems to have jumped up a level. If Aho does the same thing, if one of the most underappreciated defensemen in the sport, Jacob Slavin, does it, this is a really young team. If they all just elevate their level of play and continue to progress, I think that's how you get to the finish line. It's not about adding additions. It's not about completely upheaving the goaltending room. I think that's what it is, just incrementally with the younger players getting better year to year.
Josh Graham is a radio host with WSJS Sports Hub in North Carolina. Josh, thank you so much for your time, and cannot wait for this two-game set between the Preds and the Canes.
Let's get after it. Thanks so much, Ryan.
All right, good stuff there from Josh Graham, radio host in North Carolina. Really appreciate him joining us. Carolina, to me, is the most exciting, maybe interesting team in this new-look Central Division. With all the talent that they have offensively, they have a good defense. They're a fun team. They are very cohesive. They have the celebrations after wins on home ice that you don't see any other teams do. They are a unique bunch, and it's going to be a lot of fun to see the Preds go up against the Carolina Hurricanes. The Hurricanes have won 7 of the last 8 meetings against the Nashville Predators. But as I brought up with Justin, I do wonder if the fact that Carolina is now a division opponent, if you're going to see a lot better, I won't say effort, but just an all-around team game for 60 minutes against Carolina. We saw it against Columbus, Detroit, Tampa, Florida, teams that they usually don't see, but they're now division foes. I'm very curious to see how this Preds team matches up against Carolina. A lot of people think Carolina is one of the top two teams in the division, along with the Tampa Bay Lightning. Preds could put themselves in the conversation by getting at least two, if not three or four points in this two-game set against the Carolina Hurricanes. So thank you so much to Josh Graham for joining us here on Preds Insiders. And as always, Justin Bradford from Penalty Box Radio. I'm Ryan Porth. Again, not on the air tomorrow night with Preds Insiders because of the pregame show that starts at 6 and then face off at 7 as the Preds take on the Carolina Hurricanes. All the action heard on ESPN 102.5 The Game.